people have this idea that they'd rather put their head down and do the work than talk about it. But talking about your work is an essential part of work.
You gotta pick yourself up, go backwards, and slam yourself at the wall like 500 more times until the wall crumbles.
25% of middle school girls already believe they'll never achieve their dream career.
Hi, I'm Kara Golden, founder and CEO of Hint. And you're listening to Unstoppable, a podcast spotlighting the journeys of inspiring entrepreneurs. I believe that at its core, leadership is about constantly learning from the people around you, and I'm so inspired by the conversations we're having in our upcoming episodes and can't wait to share them with you. This season, some of my guests include Rebecca Minkoff, fashion designer and founder of the Female Founder Collective, Diana Kaff, author of Girls Who Run the World, Andrew Dunham, founder of Hims, and Eugene Rem, co-founder of Rumble Fitness, and much, much more. Plus, we ask the million-dollar question, what does it really take to be unstoppable? Let's find out. Hi, everybody. It's Kara at Unstoppable, and I'm so, so excited to have Meredith Feynman here. Hi, Meredith.
Hi. It's so lovely to see you. And I guess if you're watching this video, seeing all of you. But yeah, I haven't seen you in a minute, and it's lovely to see your long red hair and face. So,
where are you right now?
I am in my apartment in Washington, D.C.
It's a very nice apartment, actually. I'm excited to have video here where I can see you. It's very beautiful. Well, Meredith, as maybe you could tell, I've known Meredith for a little while. We're both part of this incredible group run by two women, Rachel and Glynis. It's called The List. And we met on The List, probably 4 or 5 years ago, I'm guessing.
I think longer. I would have to look into our emails, but it's been a minute. Like, I've known you for a minute.
Yeah. It's super, super fun. So anyway, a little bit about Meredith. So Meredith is an entrepreneur, a writer, and media expert. She's the founder of a group called Fine Point, which is this incredible group about leadership and professional development. And basically looking at individuals, mostly working with CEOs and senior leadership founders and women in positions on how to actually speak more about you and your company. We'll talk a little bit more about Brag Better as well. But she's done lots of amazing stuff with Harvard Business Review, Forbes, Fast Company, and Elle. So you may recognize her name. She also runs workshops that you should definitely, we'll talk about where to find Meredith, but you should definitely check out her workshops because they're super, super helpful. And now we're here today to talk about this new incredible book that's coming out in June called Brag Better. And I'm so excited to have her here. So let's just talk just for a few minutes about, so first of all, Fine Point, like how did you get started? How did you decide to sort of jump in to actually founding this group?
Thank you for that beautiful wind up. I didn't. A lot of people ask me, they're like, oh, your business plan, whatever. Oh boy. I am a millennial who graduated at the height of the recession in 2009. I lived in South America, in Argentina, working in advertising at Young & Rubicam for almost a year and a half. And then I came back to Washington, D.C., where I'm from, and lasted about 5 months working at an agency. And I've been a freelance writer since I was about 18 years old. I've always had varying side hustles. So I left my job without having another job, which in retrospect was only something someone who was like, 23 and clueless, would do. I had just a lot of balls, and I was always writing on the side and throwing parties and doing stuff. And so I started Fine Point now about like nine plus years ago. And I was doing more digital strategy. And then I became more of a public relations person, PR person people would hire. And I was always developing my own writing and speaking and television and stuff like that. And I became the go-to for individual representation, which meant that people in positions of power or just people that wanted to make names for themselves would come to me. And so I took Fine Point from more of a PR firm company to a leadership and professional development one, which is to say that, I help teach people how to be out there, whether that means they want you know, a corporate board seat, or they want actual praise, you know, very outwardly, whether it's speaking gigs or television, or whether it's within a company. And I, you know, will train people in a company about asking for what they want, talking about their work. So when I was representing individuals, I started to realize that nobody knew how to talk about themselves and or how to tout their work. And that was especially difficult for women. And so in 2013, I started speaking and training on bragging and why touting your accomplishments is essential. And Brag Better is not only for women. My demographic is what I call the qualified quiet, which are people that have done the work but don't know how to talk about it. So that's irrespective of gender, race, sexual identity, and at irrespective of point in career. So I wrote this book. I've been working on this concept since about 2013. It's out June 16th, 2020 with Portfolio at Penguin Random House. And it's all about how to use PR to leverage, you know, the skills of publicists to tout your work and ask for what you want and get recognition. And recognition can mean very different things for people, but to advance your career more or less.
You talked a little bit about that this is not just for women, it's also for men, but let's talk about women for a minute. Why do you think women have an issue actually talking about themselves?
Yeah, I mean, so I was, before I started to do this, it was something I noticed when I was representing women in particular, but also I was watching the trajectory. So I'd have really young women that wanted to intern or work for me that had trouble, you know, touting and bragging about their past background. And then I'd be in networking situations with friends or colleagues, you know, contemporaries rather, and I'd hop in and play publicist. And then it was just, I was seeing it at the very, very high level where, you know, nobody could brag about what they'd done, own their accomplishments, say, you know, I did this, I did that. And, you know, my thing is that bragging is about stating true facts, but it's a systemic problem that comes from, you know, the oppression and suppression of women's voices, women, you know, being in more positions of power than ever, and the difficulties that come with being a woman in public, being judged on metrics that men are not, positive attributes being associated with passive behaviors, particularly around voice. I mean, in the book, I talk about how, like, you know, in the Odyssey, there's references to women shutting up. So it's this message of be quiet and shut up. And, you know, women also either giving credit to other people or, you know, we don't have a lot of role models for this. We don't have a vocabulary to talk positively about professional accomplishment, which is what Brag Better is that vocabulary that I've worked on and refined through exercises and being a writer and finding those words. But it's of zero surprise to me that this is difficult for women. I mean, people tell you to shut up. People tell you to do things in a million different contradictory ways. You're policed from your voice to your ankles, as I'm sure, Kara, like you can attest to. And putting yourself out there is really scary. And there's real danger to being a woman in public, like actual physical danger. And we don't have, you know, the right words for it and the skills for it. And so that's what Brag Better aims to do for all of the qualified quiet, but specifically for women. And it's hard to be listened to as a woman. We listen to the default, you know, voices of men, literally, you know, a lot of scientific research. And so it's certainly not about getting men to shut up. I always want to be very, very clear about that. It's about getting men to echo the sentiments of women and voices of women and just everyone who's in a position of power and privilege to pass the mic to someone that whose voice we might not here. A huge part of Bragging Better is also uplifting the voices of everyone around you because there's space for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like when people are talking about their accomplishments, so often they talk about where they worked, mm-hmm. right? That is like a go-to, like, oh, well, I was, you know, I was the founder of this, or I was the VP of this or whatever. And I feel like that's not even necessarily what people like are looking for out of that kind of question when they ask you, what have you accomplished? How do you help people kind of drill down on what those pieces yeah. are? Like, how do they, you know, if you're sitting at home and trying to figure out, I mean, in some ways, like, I feel like it's not just about your resume. It's really about what have you accomplished, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to be clear too that you don't have to have founded a company to be able to brag. Like mm-hmm. it's never about reinventing the wheel. I say this with my clients and I say it in the book. I say it to everyone. Everyone has things to brag about. It's not the what, it's the how you're delivering it. And so one thing too is, you know, you have to tell people what you want. You have to tell people who you are over and over and over again in order to, you know, advance to whatever you're trying to do. But sharing those accomplishments, humans grasp storytelling and your energy and what you're excited about. So when you're making an introduction, I talk a lot about the importance of introductions and saying, you know, oh, as a VP at X, Y, and Z, or you could say, oh, I was a VP at X, Y, and Z, and I led this big team and we just did this awesome project. Like if you're excited about it, then other people can also, you know, if you're excited and you're bragging about what you've done, then other people can latch onto it and support you also. And yeah, I mean, titles and certain workplaces mean so many different things to so many different people. So talking about some of the things you've accomplished that you're proud of, but also that other people are able to understand. I mean, I think that's one thing that publicists do and other communications people is help sort of translate people's specialties and areas of expertise into things that anyone can grasp onto. That, you know, if you're bragging can, you know, this book is for professional use, but you know, there are a lot of personal applications and it's just about being proud of what you've done and realizing what you've done is enough and worthy of sharing and praise.
So do you think that when people are reading this, my take is it's not just about what you can say about yourself, but what you can get your publicist to say about you, what you can get. Is that accurate? I mean, it's not just about...
Well, so yeah, bragging better is about being able to talk positively about what the work you've done, but also mm-hmm. being able to talk positively about the work of those around you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this stems from also being in and around the media for a really long time, our really intense inverse relationship between volume and merit. And so we reward loud. And as much as I'd like to be optimistic and say that we can get the loud people to be quiet and listen, I just don't think that's going to happen. I think it's a matter of getting that qualified quiet to start talking. And it's scary and it's uncomfortable and you're worried people are going to call you obnoxious. And, you know, I've worked on this idea for almost a decade. Like I understand what that means and why it's scary, but it's also, if you don't tell people what you do, like it's a huge part of doing the work. People have this idea that they'd rather put their head down and do the work than talk about it. But talking about your work is an essential part of work. I mean, Carrie, you know, with the brands that you run, like, you know, you do a tremendous amount of work, but it's also how you talk about them and package them, like literally or, you know, figuratively in showing people what you've accomplished in. Totally. And so I think that, you know, at a sheer baseline, I care that we get better experts, particularly in media. And I'm sure if you're listening to this, no matter what industry you're in, you can probably think to yourself that you can think of someone in your subject area or your industry that gets all the praise, but is certainly either you've done more or you know more. And I think that, you know, people are worried about either bragging too much or being, I think that what the delineation there is really the self-awareness to be worried about those sorts of things. I just want everyone to start talking. If you know this stuff, I think in a year like 2020, in an election year, it's really also somewhat civic responsibility to if you know the stuff and have done the work, please start talking about it so that other people can be inspired and learn from you.
Well, I think, you know, as you and I were talking, as we were getting on this podcast, we're taping it in the midst of the corona crisis right now. And I think that there's no better time to start thinking about, like, how do people actually talk about what they've accomplished? Because I've even talked to some people who, you know, have not lost their job, but are actually thinking about through this break that maybe they want to go out and do something else. So as you start thinking about what are all the things that you've accomplished, I think it's not just about what are the things that you've accomplished that you don't like, but that you also like, allow you to really view like what you ultimately want to do. So I think there's no better time for this as well.
I hope so. I really hope so. I mean, who on earth, can I swear on this podcast?
Yes.
Oh, who could have fucking predicted this? You know, I mean, you know, virologists or whatever will be like, we did. But for us lay people that don't study viruses, yeah, so my book was postponed by a month. I'm thrilled it's coming out June 16th. You know, we just made the best choice. And I, you know, my publisher has been incredible. It's a totally unprecedented time. It's a really scary time. And maybe this idea that I'm asking you to do something scary on top of a scary time, either maybe they'll cancel themselves out or you'll just do it anyway. But, you know, we live in a really really uncertain time. I'm writing an extra chapter on how to brag better from home and how to brag better online, which will be free. And that will be released before the book comes out as soon as I finish it. And it will be, you know, all of that will be readily available in any place you can find me, which we'll obviously get to later. But I really wanted that because I was like, oh no, like now people really need to communicate their value and their work because you also can't get in front of someone's face. I mean, you and I are doing this over the Zoom because also we live on opposite coasts, but so much of work or business is being able to be with people that it's totally, you're going to have to be even more outspoken about the work that you've done. And also because, I mean, I am insanely fortunate and privileged and be able to stay at home and all of those things. But you know, the nature of work is going to shift. And so more than ever, you have to tell people what you need and what you want professionally in such a time of uncertainty as well.
It's really interesting topic too, because like, how do you do that through, you know, this, this new world? I mean, whether it's, you know, I guess Zoom is one aspect of it, but I'm also thinking about, you know, how do you show up on LinkedIn? How do you show up on Twitter? How do you, I mean, all of these different, you know, social media platforms, and do you need to show up on all of them either? I mean, I think that's like, that's a whole other topic, but how do you present yourself, right? Because I think in so many places, it's not about what your title is. It's really about, can people relate to you? Can people, you know, sort of hear you through these platforms?
Yeah, titles, and I talk about this in the book, titles mean nothing because especially since we're in an economy where so many people do their own thing, they just give themselves titles. And, you know, one thing that I've done with clients, you know, is they're a VP at a company and it's actually an incredibly big deal to be a VP at wherever they are. But that means only other people who maybe work directly with them understand how big of a deal it is to be a VP at that company. So it is about communicating, you know, projects you've led, value you've brought in for your company, you know, what you're good at in your job. And yeah, so we're now in this extreme situation where we can't gather. And so your online presence and your consistency of presence of how you present yourself. So like, what are some things you can do right now? Because this is a lot of like big ideas. I want anyone listening to feel like they can, you know, have tangible things. So let's start somewhere simple. I talk about all the time, which is your bio. So your bio is one of the ultimate, I would say like the ultimate bragging spots. And I see a lot of people miss it. I think people, that's one place where it is totally acceptable and encouraged to brag. Every award, every accomplishment, full kitchen sink. So one thing you can do right now online is make sure, first thing first, all of your bios are consistent across wherever. If a conference, you know, if a conference booker or a recruiter or someone can't figure out who you are and what you've done in a cohesive package in a short amount of time, you know, then they will move on to someone who's better packaged, which that person might be way less qualified than you. So I tell people to do a quarterly calendar reminder to update their bio, keep it in one Google document or OneNote or whatever you use. And everyone needs a long, a short, and a two-line bio. Long bio, kitchen sink, everything. I want every award. I want you to remove like silly, fun references. I think I don't see the bio changing in terms of like something that all professionals have and need. If it's something quirky that relates to your business or relates to your brand, then that's fine. But otherwise, I would kill it. And then a short bio, paragraph, two-line bio goes on all your social media. I think that's like a great place to just start. And if you're having trouble, you know, thinking about things you've done, ask people close to you to jog your memory or people you've worked with, and do it every quarter so that it's not, you don't have to go back every 2 years. Like Kara, like you're always, you know, winning awards or on X, Y, and Z lists. Like I would want you to, and I'm sure you keep a running tally of all of that so that it can be presented. Like the keys to presenting yourself and the keys to getting people to listen are repetition and consistency. So like those are the two cornerstones right now, I would say, are repetition and consistency.
I love that. So two ways to get people to listen, repetition and consistency.
Yeah, that's good. I'm writing it down.
I love it. So in the book, Brag Better, you talk about a technique that helps people get past anxiety Can you give us a little preview of that?
Yeah, of course. Of course. I know I want to do like story time and just start reading my book to people, but I feel like my publisher might have a problem with that. Yeah. So first of all, blanket, you're so not alone in your discomfort with these feelings that this is what I do for a living. If it were easy, if everyone was good at it, I wouldn't have a job. And we also have this mixed up idea that you should know how to do these things, maybe because it falls along soft skills or whatever you want to, you know, call it, but you should know how to do these things. And I have spoken to thousands of people, and there are two people I can think of, maybe one in the thousands I've spoken to about this concept over the past decade, that have said to me, oh, I'm fine. Everyone else is like, oh, I'm so bad at that. And like household names, like, oh my God, I'm so bad at that. I'm like, well, yeah, but that's okay. Like, what I'm teaching is not rocket science. Mm-hmm. Like, what's much harder is taking the time to put in the work, get the degrees, you know, make sure you know your stuff, which you definitely do if you identify with the qualified quiet, which I would say most of us are to some degree. So it's a learned skill set, and it's scary and it's hard, but it is about dipping a toe in. So, you know, I hope that the whole thing reduces anxiety. When you're doing new hard things, they often create anxiety and it's scary to put yourself out there. But I would say, you know, one thing I really cared about with Brag Better was it wasn't just sentiment. I care that you feel better, but I also, like, these are all deeply tangible skill sets and, you know, techniques and, you know, things that you can do. So one small thing, like depending on where you are, like whether it's, I'll use an extreme example, but I talk in the book about how I counseled a whole firm and there were a bunch of junior members and one in particular, she needed to speak up more in meetings. So whether that is genuinely, and not all of this is for entrepreneurs, like we're entrepreneurs and, you know how to ask for certain things, but if you're in a larger organization, you know, maybe it's writing down one question to contribute to the all hands meeting or, you know, your pods meeting once a week and being able to raise your hand and do it. Like it can be a very small action. I'm not mm-hmm. asking you to like go on TV. I'm asking you to at least just, even if you say to your coworker at the end of the week, like, hey, I'm really proud of that, like, you know, X, Y, and Z call I had with the client. Like, I think it went really well. Even that interpersonally. And then starting to brag better for others, like saying to that coworker, like, hey, I noticed you really killed that presentation. Like, I'd love to, you know, tell our boss about it if you need me to. Or, you know, there's so much we can do together that's really important as well. So, you know, in terms of the anxiety factor, I understand it. This will go into why it feels anxious. You know, it feels anxiety provoking. It all makes complete sense. The anxiety is incredibly normal with all of these activities. Like, that's why I do this. That's why I wrote this book. So I think one thing that alleviates it though is everyone feels scared about this. It's pretty universal. And even people that are on TV all the time or speaking all the time will tell you they still get nervous. Like, I want to throw up at the beginning of every speech, but I still get on a plane and do the speech. You know, at this point, you've given so many speeches, Kara, and done so much TV and all of those things. But I mean, it's still to some degree, you get probably a little bit because you give a shit.
Well, it's interesting. I always tell people that, you know, I was always a very social person, but and much to many people's surprise, and maybe as I looked deeply at myself, I was really afraid of public speaking. And I think for me, I mean, it, you know, touches on many things that you talk about in this book too, but it was just my own, you know, probably confidence somewhere in there too, that I just thought, like, I'm on stage, I'm in front of these people and I'm being judged in some way. And so I finally decided that I would do a talk. And what's interesting, the thing that I never really knew was like the issue that I was most afraid of was following a deck. Like, mm-hmm. like that was the thing for me that was just, like, and again, I used to think that it actually was about public speaking, but it was yeah. really less about that. It was more about the,
I don't use decks at all.
Right. And so it was interesting because I did a deck for the first kind of big talk that I did. And then I got called, there was somebody in the audience and they saw me speak and they reached out mm-hmm. and they wanted me to do this presentation. And I said, you know, I just don't really have time to kind of prepare. And it's a little bit different than the presentation that you saw me give. And they said, oh, well, there's no decks. And I said, wait, what? Like, there's no deck. And so part of it really terrified me. But then the other part of me, I thought, well, okay, well, there's no deck. So I'll just get up there and go do it. And like you said, I mean, I felt super nauseous, like right before I got up there and did it. And it was my best talk, because what I realized about me was that, and I think this is really true for, you know, lots of people, but I'm good at reading audiences. And so mm-hmm. when I would get up, and no matter how much people had prepared me about who I was going to be speaking to, whether that was, you know, a group of tech people, a group of, you know, at-home mothers, at, you know, like whatever it was, they really didn't get the same kind of perception that I got from, right. you know, that audience. And so what I really felt like was the key thing was that, you know, I had to have the ability to change a little bit once I got up there. And if mm-hmm. I had this thing written in stone, it was really, really hard for me. So by the third time I got called to do a presentation, I said, well, I don't really have time to do a deck. So would it be okay if I did it without a deck? And they said, oh no, we actually need a deck. And I said, you know, the only way that I'll be able to do it is because I have a full-time job as a CEO is to actually do it without the deck. And they said, oh, okay, we'll see how it goes. And then after that, the conference, now they don't do decks at all, because they were like, it was so much better. It was real. It was like,
yeah, actually, decks make me, I don't speak with decks for a similar reason, but also it's just like so much extra consideration. I get like, totally. I am very savvy, but I'm very, very technologically challenged. So I will fuck it up. You know, I guess I'll have like one slide, cause they're like, oh, do you need AV? I'm like, no, I never need AV. But you know, I give out paper handouts. I mean, that sort of stuff is more memorable to me than looking at a deck. Like,
yeah.
I've never sat at a talk and been like, man, you know what really made that person's speech? That deck. Like, yeah. No, it never no, did. True. If anything, everyone's distracted looking at this deck of like, people look at the deck, not the speaker. So, I mean, there are situations where decks are required and then I will get my clicker and deal with it. But, you know, I talk a lot about public speaking in the book, and a fear of public speaking is more common than a fear of death. And Susan Cain, who wrote Quiet, talks about her like crippling fear of public speaking. You know, for me, I avoided it for a really long time until someone wanted to pay me a chunk of money. And I was like, oh, now I got to figure this out. So I got a speaking coach and she helped me. And, you know, now, you know, I used to noodle for days and now I'm like, oh, sorry, when am I speaking again? What is it? Like, oh, here we go. Like, but the preparation really matters, that part. Like, it's easy to put it off, and but that stuff is scary and it requires practice and time and energy, and everyone's scared by it. Like, for someone to hear that, like, you would be, you know, freaked out or whatever, they'd be like, what are you talking about? Like, she runs this, you know, like, so these universal feelings that we don't acknowledge, you know, it's, we're all in them together.
Well, and I think it's
the
just
theme
talks,
of everything right now.
What I learned from that too is that, and you know, you have a great quote that I read out there somewhere, if it's a great opportunity, you'll figure it out. I think that if you actually go and do that and figure it out, you may learn something about yourself. For example, like you may learn, you know, and talk in really sitting down with Brad better, but potentially also going to some of your events that you host, that there's other things about you that you didn't even think were necessarily things that you wanted to brag about, right? Or should brag about. And I think that's the key thing. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Well, and something you can do that's easy too is I tell people to, like, here's another quick action you can do. Email 5 people, you know, a colleague, someone in your professional circle, a friend, a family member, a loose tie, someone you like sort of know through association, and like just someone you only know through social media, and ask all 5 of them to describe what you do. And if they're not similar, then it's also about thinking about how you're communicating your output, because it doesn't all, it doesn't all have to come from you, because like a family member loves you and supports you, but oftentimes they don't know what you do, or a friend sees you as a friend and doesn't know what you do professionally, and like vice versa for someone who sees you professionally, but not personally. And you want to be able to like sort of blend all those together so that everyone can understand your work and you know what you've done that's great, but also getting a, you can do some of that like sort of testing out in the world of like what you're putting out there. And you can, there's so many people that can help you.
That's awesome. So I always ask people, what makes you unstoppable? And I think you've said a few things, but what would you say is it, what comes to mind? What makes Meredith unstoppable?
I'd say my humor is one thing that makes me unstoppable.
I love that.
And then I guess just my like sheer force of will and desire to wear great secondhand clothing. So I gotta, you know, work to be able to dress that and my dog and make her wear t-shirts, but they're not designer t-shirts. They're just,
and we were talking a little bit about this. So the other side of your business, you have a podcast on that whole topic. So tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. So I have a podcast called It Never Gets Old, a firsthand account of all things secondhand and sustainable. It stems from my ferociously buying and selling clothing secondhand for about 20 years or longer. And I have consistently made money on my wardrobe. I wear almost all designer clothing, 95% of which was owned by someone else first. And it is a multi-billion dollar industry that now I advise like VCs or other people in and around the area. It's going to be a $24 billion business by, I think they're saying 2022. And Gen Z really, really gives a shit about the climate, and it's the most sustainable option is wearing stuff that already exists. So whether it's, you know, a deep dive on Chanel or about thrifting, it's just a really, really fun world and hobby for me that, you know, talking about one thing, like sometimes we don't acknowledge things we're really good at because we see them as not work necessarily. And forever, I just sort of was like, oh yeah, I have this insane well of knowledge about secondhand, like a, you know, not photographic memory is wrong, but like I just like have cataloged so much way more than the 10,000 hours on this stuff. So it's been really, really fun to share. And it's obviously different from the brag better topic, but something that's fun and interesting and good for the planet.
I love it. I love it. So where can people find you, Meredith?
Yes. So you can find me everywhere at Meredith Feynman on all the social medias. And please order Brag Better. If you go to brag-better.com, you can order it from The Big Guy or one of your local bookstores. Audiobook, just finished recording, Kindle, skywriting version, however you can get it to you. And I really hope you like it. I interviewed so many people in this book with many, many different points of view, whether that's, you know, gender, age, level of seniority, ability, sexuality, all of those things. Just really, I care to, you know, the most important thing to leave people with is just to pass the mic. When someone listens to you, then use that to help someone else get listened to as well.
I love that. I love that. So this is really, really awesome. Very last question. Favorite new flavor?
I remember there was one summer when I lived in, like, so this was before I knew you.
Yeah.
And I remember like when I think I've known you for like seven, I need to look at the emails, but I want to say it's like 6 or 7 years. And I remember the first time I ever saw Hint, I was living in New York and I was like, this is watermelon water.
Great. It's amazing.
And then I went back and bought another one. And then that whole summer, it was a particularly hot summer in New York City. And I just drank the watermelon Hints. So that was before I knew you. And then I remember I was like, oh my gosh, that watermelon water lady.
I love it. I love it. I love it. So, well, this is awesome. I'm so excited for your book. And don't forget to pre-order brag-better.com, right?
Yes.
And then just Google also Brag on Better. Amazon as well, right?
Yes. So I always say, have to say brag-better because bragbetter.com, I think I didn't spring for, which at this point I should fucking spring for it. but that has also like more about the book, more about me, like snippets of content, et cetera, et cetera.
Awesome. I'm so excited. So very, very excited. So congratulations, and everybody get on and start ordering and learn how to brag better. Thanks so much, Meredith.
Thank you so much, Kara.
Yeah, thanks.
If you like what you heard, please help spread the word and leave us a review. You can also follow along with me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Kara Golden. Do you have a question for me or want to nominate an innovator to spotlight? Please talk to me at Kara Golden on Twitter. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, be unstoppable. Unstoppable. Unstoppable.